Shelby? Can you hear me with this microphone? Is this okay? No, you don't. Okay. My name is Iona Rutkowska. I work for Casa Inc., the Singapore security company, as a security researcher. I work as a security researcher. And the title of my speech is about investor kernels for some profit. This presentation is based on a research done for Casa Inc. research. And it was first given at System Conference in Singapore. Can you, translators, can you give me a sign when you're ready? Okay. So this presentation consists of two parts. Part one will show you how to load unsigned kernel into Vista, well, I said Vista Beta 2, but it also applies to Vista RC1, Vista Release Candidate 1, without reboot. And the second part is how to use hardware virtualization technology to create stealth malware using Pacifica technology. So although you see Vista Beta 2, it also applies to Vista RC1. Part one. In Vista, Microsoft, at the beginning of this year, Microsoft released a paper which said that all kernel drivers will have to be signed. So even administrator will not be able to load unsigned code into kernel. This is to prevent kernel malware. And as some people believe, also to prevent anti-DRM. This mechanism can be deactivated for testing or for development, either by attaching kernel debugger or by using F8 during system reboot, or using BCD edit tool, but only in beta versions, and in RC1 it was removed. So currently we have only two methods for disabling this mechanism for kernel protection, and both of those methods require system reboot. And this presentation has been for the first time implemented, this protection has been for the first time implemented on Vista Beta 2. Okay, how to bypass this mechanism? So how to load unsigned driver into kernel with rootkit or whatever. So, first of all, we need to observe that user mode applications can get raw access to disk using documented API functions like create file //.c:, or this one. So we either get access to logical sectors or physical sectors. This is well-documented behavior. It means that we can read and write these sectors also belonging to something which is called page file. A page file is something which keeps, it's something which is used to store the contents of memory which was temporarily paged out from kernel to disk to make space for other memory. So it means we can modify the contents of the page file using this raw disk access. And this page file may, of course, contain code and data paged from kernel memory. To do this, we don't need to use any undocumented functionality. All is documented in SDK, Software Developer's Guide. So the idea is this. We're going to modify some code in page file and hope the kernel will load it again into kernel and execute it. But we have some challenges here. First, how to make sure that the specific kernel code is paged out to page file. Second, how to find that code inside PageFile. The next challenge is how to code the code which we just modified that, how to code that it's be loaded to kernel again. And eventually, how to make sure that it's going to be executed by kernel. If we succeeded with all of this, we can load arbitrary code into kernel and get it executed. Okay, how to source drivers to be paged? We can use a virtual alloc documented API function. The system will try to do its best to back up this memory with the actual physical pages. So we'll see more and more memory, virtual memory, to be paged out to page file. And among those memory will of course have kernel drivers. On this picture, we can see an experiment which was taken on a system which had around one gigabyte of physical memory. This red line is the amount of available physical memory. The green line is the amount of kernel driver's resident code. So the amount of bytes which resides, which still is in kernel and was still not paged out. This is 1 gigabyte, this is 4 megabytes. So the scale is different for those two charts. Okay, and now we try to allocate some memory. First allocation is here. We see that the amount of physical memory drops down. We allocated like 500 megabytes here. Then we try another allocation and another allocation. And we see that at some point, the number of resident kernel drivers bytes drops down. Because at this point, there was no more available memory to fulfill this virtual alloc request. So kernel decided to page out some driver's code to page file, of course. So here we got kernel drivers be paged out to page file. And we remember that we can modify the contents of page file. So of this, what was page here. You can see that if we going to repeat this virtual alloc call, at some point there will be no more memory available. And at some point, no more drivers, no more driver code and data will be paged because only the unused drivers can be paged out. Okay, what can be moved to page file? Of course, this can be pageable sections of kernel drivers, so the code sections which were marked as pageable, as well as drivers data allocated from page pool. Okay, finding a target. So we need to find some not often used driver which has some code section which is marked as pageable. One example of such driver is null.sys. And after a quick look at the code, we can see that the dispatch routine, driver dispatch routine, is actually located in this pageable code section. Of course, null.sys is just one driver. There are more drivers which fulfill this requirement. This is very easy. To locate the code which we need to, which we would like to overwrite with our shellcode, we just need to do the pattern search. Once we find a pattern, we just replace it with our shellcode, and the shellcode could be anything. I will show you a shellcode which will just disable kernel protection mechanism. So another driver could be loaded after this mechanism was disabled. Mm. Now, how to make sure that our shortcut gets executed? So we modified some driver's code, which was paged out to page file. And how to make sure that now this code is going to be loaded into kernel and executed? And if we decided to modify, for example, dispatch driver routine from node.sys, it's actually very easy because all we need to do is to use create file function with to open device object created by the driver. So this will cause the driver's code to be paged into kernel and executed. And of course, instead of driver's dispatch routine, our shortcut will get executed. Okay, so to summarize this, we allocate lots of memory and we cause unused driver's code to be paged out. We replace some of the code of those drivers with our shortcut, and then we ask kernel to load this code, this overwritten code, into kernel and execute it. And this was implemented as a one-click tool, so special heuristic has been implemented to know how much memory we need to allocate to make sure that our driver is actually paged. And the shortcut, which I'm going to use in the demo, which I'm going to show you in a minute, just disables signature checking. So after we run this exploit, Vista will think that it was started with kernel protection disabled. So then we will be able to load an unsigned driver. Of course, we can create some more useful shortcuts. Like, for example, shortcuts which would automatically download our own driver without using an API from Vista, but it's just a different thing. Okay, another demo. Okay, we will try to load unsigned driver first. Debug Views is a tool from SysInternals which tries to load unsigned driver, and as you can see, it cannot be done in Vista. The hash of the image cannot be found, right? So Debug View doesn't work on Vista because it's not signed. It doesn't have signed driver. Now I'm going to run my exploit, kernel strike. It allocates some memory. You can see the number of drivers on page left. And now it opens route this access, parses NTFS information, finds which sectors belong to pagefile.sys, starts pattern searching, overwritten first 23 bytes with our shortcut, which disables the signature check. And now we're going to try to load debug view again. And this time, we succeeded, right? We didn't get the warning that the driver was not signed, we just got the debug view running. And although this demo was shot on Vista Beta 2, it also works on Vista SU1. And of course, it was Vista 64-bit edition. Okay, possible solutions. Solution number one, forbid route this access from user mode. So, just a straightforward solution, right? But this move would probably break a lot of applications, like disk editors, antivirus programs, some databases maybe. Besides, access would still be possible from kernel mode. So I bet that a lot of applications, like disk editors, would bundle their own kernel driver to be used to read kernel, to be used to read route sectors from kernel mode. So in that case, and of course those drivers would have to be signed because they're gonna be perfectly legal drivers, right? But that would mean that all the attacker would have to do is just to bundle the same driver and use it just if he was a disk editor or whatever. So this is not a good solution. solution number two, encrypt page file. So even the some kernel code and kernel data would still be able to be put into page file, we wouldn't be able to find those data and modify them because the page file would be encrypted. The biggest problem would probably be the performance impact of this. I don't know the performance impact, but it might be big, depending on the application. And actually, you can enable page file encryption in Vista, I think starting from beta 1. This was added to prevent, it was added to implement this BitLocker, or what's the name? BitLocker? BitLocker. But to do this, you need to find some magic registry key, set it to 1, and then reboot the system. But it's not a good solution because attacker can just come, set it to 0, and reboot the system and perform the same attack. I know. So this is a good solution, probably, but complicated and might introduce some performance impact. Solution number 3, which I think is the best, is just to disable kernel mode paging. Some people believe that the amount of memory which can be pageable from kernel is about 80 megabytes. So by disabling kernel paging, in the worst case, we lose 80 megabytes. This is just nothing today, right? Because today we have like gigabytes of memory. And it's a very simple way, and very, very good way. Okay, the presented attack doesn't rely on any implementation bug nor any undocumented functionality, so it's a design bug. Microsoft did a good thing towards securing kernel by implementing this kernel protection mechanism. And the fact that this mechanism was bypassed doesn't mean that Vista is completely insecure, just not that secure as it was advertised. However, Microsoft should do something about this attack, because currently we have all this requirement to sign drivers by developers. Every developer needs to buy a certificate for signing driver code, and deploy this whole PKI mechanism. But on the other hand, attackers can just do this attack, which I just presented, and have their code loaded into kernel for free. So this situation is not really good, and I hope Microsoft is going to do something about it. Okay, we're moving to part 2 of this presentation. So now, once we know how to load unsigned kernel into Vista, at least one way how to do this, we will think what to do with this ability. And one thing we can do is, because what we want to do is we want to create some stealth malware. And one way of doing this is to abuse hardware virtualization technology. So what we have today is something I call invisibility by obscurity, which means that all the like stealth malware, like rootkits or kernel backdoors or whatever, they are as stealth as their algorithm, as their concept is stealth. So once we know that a few work by unlinking key processes from some kernel list of processes, it's trivial to write a detector. Once we know that deepdoor is another malware, modifies some functions, pointers, insights, and the data structures, it's trivial to just look at those data sections and find out that they were modified. So once you know the concept, you can write a detector. So this is not really interesting. So now imagine a malware which doesn't rely on a concept to remain undetected. So it can be, which algorithm can be made public, and still we would not be able to come up with a good detector for it. We can go even further and think of a malware which would have its code, its binary code, public, and still would not be able to detect it. Am I going too fast? A little? Okay, that's better. Can I turn the... The idea behind Blue Pill is to use AMD64 SVM extensions. SVM stands for Secure Virtual Machine, to move the operating system into virtual machine on the fly without the operating system even knowing that it's moved to the virtual machine. So we come to the machine, we create a virtual machine, a hardware virtual machine, we move the operating system into this machine, and we become hypervisor. So we are supervising the OS. What is SVM? It was introduced into AM2 series of for the first time. It was released on May 23rd, and it's just a set of instructions which can be enabled by switching processor to SVM mode, and then we can use those instructions to create virtual machines. And I'm going to show you how to do this within the next few minutes. To move the processors, or to switch the processors, or to enable the SVM mode, we need to just set one bit in so-called FR register, MSR FR register. So once we set this bit, the processor works in SVM mode. This is very important because we need to, because when we want to be stealth, because it's easy for the operating system just to read this register and realize that actually it's running inside VM, right? Because the bit would be set. So to prevent this, we need to intercept MSR FR register reads and cheat about the value of this register. And this has some implications. Okay, this is how SVM works. We have there's a very important instruction which was introduced with SVM. This instruction is called VMRun. This instruction takes one argument. The argument is the address of something which is called VMCB, Virtual Machine Control Block. This VMCB consists of two parts. Part one is the state of the virtual machine. So the registers like RIP, RSP, some segment registers, etc. The second part of the MCB is the control block, which basically says what events which happens in guest we would like to intercept. So we can say we would like to intercept all page fault exceptions, for example. Or we can say we would like to intercept all debug exceptions, all our CR3 register reads. Okay, so now how we create virtual machine. We are executing some code, and suddenly we executing VMRun instruction. This instruction reads the VMCB contents and creates a virtual machine with a state which was described by this state block, and starts executing the code, which is pointed by VMCB RIP register. And this code executes until some event which we are intercepting occurs. So if we are intercepting page faults, so this code executes until page fault occurs, for example. So exception number 14. So this is guest, and this is host. This is supervisor, this is virtual machine. you should think about VMRun as of a call instruction, right? Because this is just like calling a function. We call a function, the function does something, the intercept occurs, and the control goes back to the instruction just after the VMRun. Just like if it was a call instruction, assembler call instruction. Do you have any questions to this slide? This is a very important slide. Is it clear? Okay, one question, please.
How can you talk about the state of the operating system?
How do you what?
How do you transfer the current state of the operating system into the virtual machine?
Okay, the question was how do I transfer the current state of the operating system into virtual machine? The answer is, I'm not doing this at this slide. This slide is just how to use SVN for legal purposes. It has nothing to do with Bluepill. We don't know nothing about Bluepill right now. This is what you can read in SVN manual, right? This is how you create virtual machine. This is VMware, and this is whatever, Linux, right? We don't do this right now. Okay, let's move to the next slide, because the next slide is actually how we can abuse this technology to actually create Bluepill. And this is the most important slide. Okay. We are inside, this is native operating system, some instruction flow, right? So imagine that now we load our Bluepill. Bluepill is the code name for the malware which uses this. So at some point, the malware calls, well, let's say Bluepill function. It's like at some point the operating system is forced to call this Bluepill function. This is where everything begins. The function does this. It first enables SVM. So it sets the SVME bit to 1 in SR register. And then it prepares VMCB in such a way, this is what he just asked, in such a way that the virtual machine which we're going to create with this VMRun will have the same state as this operating system. So basically we are cloning the current state to this virtual machine. This is not virtual machine. To the virtual machine which you're going to create here. With some exceptions. And one exception is the RIP pointer, which we're going to point to the return instruction from our function. Now imagine what happens. VMRun instruction gets executed. It creates a virtual machine with the state from this VMCB block, which was copied, which reflects the state of this native operating system, and starts executing this machine from the thread instruction. The thread instruction returns to this point, to the instruction just after call Bluepill. So we start executing, the virtual machine starts executing from the next instruction after call Bluepill. So it continues executing the instruction flow from the native operating system. But now it executes inside virtual machine. And let's say the intercept occurs here. Because let's say we said that we're gonna intercept debug exceptions. So let's say debug exception occurs here. We will return to the instruction just after VMRun, and here we can do the check of what was the cause of the intercept, it was debug exception, and do some action. So here we have hypervisor. By executing VMRun, we became hypervisor here. And the native operating system was moved into virtual machine. Right? And the funny thing is that the operating system doesn't even know that it has been just moved into the virtual machine. This is the whole point. Okay, question?
Bhupriya.
Okay. After the Bhupriya finished, and you know that black arrow. How can I say? Sorry about that. Okay. I just want to know. There should be time difference here and here. System time should be changed. So, how can I say?
Okay, so yeah, it will of course take some time, but we cannot measure this time because I will talk about timing analysis later, okay? But this is not a good point for timing analysis because this happens somewhere in the operating system. We don't know where. We cannot, if we consider ourselves as antivirus program or whatever, we cannot measure this time. We don't know where it happens. This could be like, I don't know, you can think of, this was, I don't know, code of the HTTP server, and suddenly it got exploited, and exploit called Bluepill and returned. We don't know where in the code flow this occurred, so just we can't measure the timing here. But I will tell about timing analysis later. Okay. Any more questions to this slide? Okay. Next question. You have a microphone on your left. How much time do we still have? 1 minute? 1 hour, okay. Okay.
Okay, so you have the situation with multiple cores or multiple processors.
Uh-huh.
You have some
This is a simplified picture for just one core. The proof of concept I implemented works on single core. Well, there's nothing which stops us from implementing it on dual core. We just need to take care of synchronization. Well, just need to take care. It's not trivial, but it's like there's nothing which stops us from doing this, right? It's just annoying to do this. I mean, it's not a problem.
You repeat the same process.
Yeah, you need to do this on two processors independently. You need to switch two processors each core, right? Each core you need to switch to SVM mode. Because, yeah, you need to do the same twice, but you need to synchronize it. No questions? But this is the most difficult slide. Everything else will be just a piece of cake. Okay. Are you sure? Okay, the most important thing about Bluepill is that it installs itself on the fly. We don't need to reboot the system. We don't need to modify boot sector to get loaded before the OS. We just do this on the fly. Like we exploit some kernel remote bug and we just move the operating system without it even knowing about it. Bluepill, the malware which I implemented, the proof of concept which I implemented, is not persistent because it doesn't need to be. How many people use this translation? Can you raise hands? Like, how many people? Okay. But being not persistent, not necessarily the problem, because so by not persistent, I mean that when we power down the system, it disappears, right? Because it's only in memory. It's not necessarily a problem, because servers are usually not often restarted. Also, in Vista, power off button doesn't power off the system, it just puts it into suspend mode. And also, we can intercept restart events, probably. I haven't implemented yet, but maybe. And just restart the virtual machine and not the hypervisor. So we'll have our hypervisor stay here, and the virtual machine will do the restart. Well, and we will stay forever, right? Well, this has not been implemented, so I'm not 100% sure about this. But for sure, we can intercept shutdown events, and we can emulate the real shutdown. We can emulate it with the suspend mode. At the beginning of this year, Microsoft Research created SubVirt rootkit, which was also a VM-based rootkit, virtual machine-based rootkit. And I would like, and the Subvirt uses commercial VMM, virtual machine monitor, to run the original OS inside VM. And it's important to compare those two rootkits, Subvirt and Bluepill, because they sound very similar, but in fact they are completely different. So this is Subvirt from Microsoft. This is Bluepill. Subvirt is permanent, and it modifies boot sector, because it needs to do this, because it needs to take control before the real operating system, because it uses commercial VMM, it needs to start VMM and then start the operating system. So it has no choice, it needs to be persistent, it needs to modify something, it also requires a reboot to install. So we install Subvirt, we need to reboot the system to move it to the virtual machine. Also, Subvirt can be detected offline because of this, because we can just boot the system from CD and find out that boot sector was modified, right? Bluepill, as I just said, is not persistent. No reboot nor any modifications in BIOS are required. And it means Bluepill cannot be detected offline. We cannot just boot the system from the CD and detect Bluepill, because it will just disappear. Subvirt ran on x86, which does not allow for full virtualization, because we have, for example, SIDT instruction, which tries to read IDT register, and this instruction is not privileged, but sensitive. And I even wrote a few years ago, I wrote a simple tool called Red Pill, which was demonstrating this attack, how to detect virtual machines, like VMware Virtual PC. On the other hand, Bluepill relies on AMD SVM, new virtualization technology, which just cannot be detected using this attack by design. Subvirt is based on a commercial VMM, which creates and emulates its own hardware. So we see like VMware network card, VMware graphics card, VMware disk something, right? This is trivial to detect. Bluepill does not emulate any hardware. It doesn't even need to intercept any hardware events. Well, if you want, we can, but we don't need to. So the operating system, which is Bluepill, which executes inside virtual machine, have native access to all the hardware. Which means that if we bought new 3D graphics card for ultra-fast gaming, it still would be accessible and would still have the same performance when we execute it from Bluepill system.
One question.
Okay.
Besides the timing things which we will discuss, wouldn't suspend to disk be the obvious way to try to look for Bluepill?
Why disk?
Suspend to disk. If you suspend the current operating system to the disk, then reboot and look at the disk image.
Oh yeah. Because basically suspending to disk means to take a snapshot of physical memory. Okay. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
If we do the hibernation of the operating system, then our contents of memory would be on disk. Mm-hmm. But still, it doesn't mean we'll be able to detect it, because we don't know what we look for. Because Bluepill does not modify anything like kernel code or kernel data. Because if we think about any other malware, if we think about whatever rootkit, right? It needs to hook something. It, like, if we think about kernel backdoor, it needs to hook somewhere in the network stack to get the packets, for example. If we think about sniffer, keyboard sniffer, it needs to hook somewhere on the execution path which gets keystrokes from keyboard. So,
but you still need the VM mon or VM start instruction for, I mean, you need the loop in memory. You could do.
Oh, yeah, but loop could be anywhere. You don't know the code, because I'll talk about it within a few minutes. I will talk about it and I will come back to this, okay? Because
okay.
I don't want to go ahead. What happens when you install Bluepill inside a system which was already Bluepilled? So how to handle virtual machine inside virtual machine? Can we do this? Because if we couldn't, that would be a trivial way to detect it, right? Because we would just have to try to create a test virtual machine, and if we failed, that would mean that that something's wrong, right? This is how to implement nested virtual machines. This is Bluepill Hypervisor. This is native operating system which was just moved to the virtual machine. And now imagine, and now this operating system, which is now Guest, tries to create another virtual machine just to detect if it's inside or not, right? Just to do this trick. So at some point, it tries to call VM run instruction. But VM run instruction is intercepted, and it causes intercept, and the execution goes back to hypervisor. And hypervisor realizes that it was VM run which was intercepted. Oh, and of course, this guest operating system tries to create this virtual machine using some other VMCB block, like whatever. So let's call it VMCB2. So now we're realizing that it was VM run from the guest operating system, so we try to emulate it. So we will call VM run on behalf of the system. To do this on behalf, we just need to pass address of VMCB2 to this VM run. As a result, we get another machine created with these parameters, and let's say it intercepts at some point. When it intercepts, it goes back to the hypervisor, not to this VM1, of course. So now, hypervisor Bluepill realizes that the intercept was from the VM2, and it knows that it needs to resume VM1, so that it thinks that this intercept comes here, right, after this instruction. And we do this. We just resume it with VMCB1, and we start executing here. So from the VM1 point of view, we just had VM run, machine created, intercept occurred, and we landed here. Of course, the timing here is longer than normally would be. Would be like this. Timing is a different thing. I mean, we need to use a special measurement to find the timing, and I will talk about this within a minute. Okay, so now, okay, just as you suggested, the timing is different because okay, maybe different. Bluepill to be effective has to intercept at least one instruction. Read MSR. This is actually a mistake. This instruction doesn't need to be intercepted. It should be deleted. It should be removed. But read MSR needs to be intercepted. Why? Because read MSR could be used to read FR SVME bit. which says whether processor works in SVM mode or not. So if we didn't intercept it, it will be triggered to attack SVM mode, right? So always we need to intercept read MSR register. So not surprisingly, the time needed to execute read MSR to read FR would be different on a system with blue pill installed versus system which is not infected. Okay, the first problem is that usually the detector doesn't know how much time the read MSR should actually take to execute. So we don't know how we get like it took like 1 microsecond. Doesn't mean it was intercepted or not. But even if it knew, and in fact it could use some tricks to knew this, still we can cheat it. Because SVM offers a way for the hypervisor to fool guest about the time. There is a special field in VMCB in control block which is called TSC offset, which can be used to adjust the processor's internal clock. Not clock, timestamp counter. So we have this situation. We have VM run, we have guest executed, and now guest executing read MSR instruction. So of course it causes intercept. Now we are cheating about this SVM EBIT, and we are returning to the guest. So of course some extra time has passed here, right? You might wonder what is the difference. It usually is that read MSR takes 90 cycles, 90 processor cycles, and when we intercept this read MSR, it will take about 2,000 cycles. So it's about 20 to 1 on the first generation of the processors which I have. But what we do about it? We just set VMCBT itself set to minus 10x, and the guest, which checks the timestamp counter after this instruction, just gets the wrong value. But still, we can do the different trick. Okay, we can, instead of using read TSC, we could use like real-time clock from the computer. But it's not a good idea because we can intercept real-time clock request. Because when a process asks about time, there's like in-out communication, we can intercept it, hypervisor, and we could cheat about real-time clock. So the only way, the trusted way, is to use external clock. But external clock has very low resolution, so to be able to do this, we need to execute a few million of read MSR instructions. And as a result, instead of 1 second, it would take like 2,000 seconds. It's very noticeable difference. So we don't even need a stopwatch to observe it. But this is a very problematic way, because imagine that you need to do this on 1,000 computers in your company every day, or like every an hour, because we need to check computers constantly, right? So this is definitely not feasible. Can you imagine any user being forced to do this test? Every day, every morning, every few times a day? I can't. Of course, somebody can say that instead of using just user to do the timing, we can use some external network time protocol like NTP. But again, NTP is a well-known protocol. is documented in RFC. It has documented form of packets, so it's easy for Blue Pill to just intercept those packets and return the and the guest will get the wrong timing. So of course we would have to use some encrypted NTP. So we would have to set up our own NTP server in our company, which is just not that trivial. And still there are ways to cheat about this, even if you have trusted time source, but this is something I'm gonna talk about next year. Blue Pill is just a way of silently moving the running operating system into virtual machine. This technology can be exploited in many ways to create the actual malware, like sniffers, keyboard sniffers, kernel backdoors, rootkits, whatever. On the next slide, we present some very simple example. I call it delusion backdoor. It uses two debug registers to hook two Andes handlers for receiving and sending packets over the network. Blue Pill takes care about handling those debug registers and about protecting those debug registers so that the guest doesn't know that those debug registers are actually used. So it emulates that if we try to write something to debug register and then read, we will get this value. Not even a single byte is modified in kernel or Andes data or Andes code. And delusion comes with its own TCP/IP stack based on LWIP, lightweight IP. And the demo, which I'm going to show on the next slide, is taking place in this network. We have a computer which is blue-pilled, which is infected. We have remote computer which attacker uses to connect to this backdoor. Oh, and this very simple backdoor just intercepts all incoming network packets to whatever port. And if the packet is magic, has some magic, like magic source port, magic source IP, whatever, it's redirected to the blue pills, to the backdoor's own TCP/IP stack. So we have private stack, and all the magic packets goes to the stack. All the other packets, like normal communication, goes to the normal Windows stack. Very simple. Okay, the demo now. This is okay. The system is not infected yet. You can see the list of the hardware. This is the native hardware, like NVIDIA, GeForce, Lighton, whatever. Now I'm going to load Blue Pill. It will move the operating system into the virtual machine just now. You don't even see a blink of the screen, right? We go to the remote computer now. This is debug view. We see that the SVM mode has been enabled. This 12 bit was set to 1. And this was printed from the operating system running inside Matrix. So just debug view. Now we will refresh the hardware list to see that it looks exactly the same, even though the operating system now works inside virtual machine. You see exactly the same, NVIDIA, GeForce, Lighton, Realtek, whatever. All this hardware is accessible natively. Now I will just show the IP address of this computer. It's 1.206.
206.
I will just try to connect to this machine just to show you that the backdoor works. This machine is 1.10. I'm just going to send some magic packet, magic UDP packet, to port 139, for example, right? Magic packet containing magic password, right? Could be anything. Yeah, we got debug info that the key was received, the magic source IP was set to this IP. Now we will try to connect to our backdoor. We are connecting from magic port 10, and we get to port 445, which is SMB port. But instead of SMB, we get the banner from our backdoor. But at the same time, we can use the Windows SMB to connect to this computer and see that all the files are accessible using SMB file sharing protocol. So even though we just connected to our backdoor to port 445, still the SMB protocol works. And one interesting thing is, after we wait a few minutes, we get Ether intercept. So after a few minutes, we see that somebody was trying to read Ether value. And if we waited even more, like a few hours, we would get lots of calls, lots of intercepts of Ether read every 5 minutes or so. And this is actually PatchGuard. Every few minutes, PatchGuard is trying to check some operating, check some important state of the operating system, one of them being the state of the Ether register. Of course, we don't care who it is, right? Because we intercept Ether, we always return the value which shows that the SVME bit is not set. So, of course, we bypass PatchGuard by design, right? That is just interesting. So the whole idea here was that the delusion backdoor was installed by moving the operating system into hardware virtual machine and intercepting network communication without introducing any changes into network stack. We didn't hook any function pointers. We didn't hook any this code. And this is network is a network subsystem of Windows. And now this is what Paul asked about. We can think about two levels of stealth. Level one is that the backdoor cannot, or the whatever, blue pill cannot be detected. The malware based on blue pill cannot be detected, even though the concept is publicly known. So I just told you about the concept. I told you that I'm how a delusion was implemented, etc. And still cannot be detected, except for timing analysis, which is not practical. Level two would be improvement, which would also take care about hiding the actual code of the malware, binary code. Because level one is detectable by signature checking, right? Because this is kernel, and somewhere aside kernel is our bluepill hypervisor, this loop, right? But there is no modification in kernel. There is no hook in kernel which would point to this code. So there is no connection between this code and kernel. Even if we made copy of physical memory, of whole memory, all we would get would be just the kernel, which is intact, which is not modified, and some code which might be hypervisor. But the code might be very... we might make the code like using polymorphism very strange, very not straightforward. We can even... Well, there was a presentation recently at Black Hat Vegas how to make your code looking like JPEG picture, right? So we have code which looks like JPEG picture, which happens to be hypervisor, but there is no connection. Using forensic analysis, we cannot find a connection from kernel to this code. We just see, okay, some picture here, some kernel here, kernel are modified. Okay? Of course, if we published our malware, then antivirus companies would find out how to detect it by signature checking, right? This JPEG picture, whatever. But if we consider targeted attacks, and targeted attacks is something which we worry about the most, it's not possible to do this. We don't have signatures for targeted attacks. But if you wanted to make blue pill resistant to signature checking, provided that the code was published, then we have to do the memory cheating. Then we have to but for this we need something which is, well, to do this correctly, we would have something which is called nested pages. It's a hardware mechanism which is going to be released as part of the FVM, but it's going to be released in mid-2007. I'm not sure. Is it clear what I said? Does that answer your question? Yeah? So, Blobby level 1, we don't care about hiding our code, because our code is not... there's no connection between kernel and our code. It's just not hidden, because we assume we are doing targeted attack, nobody will know our code. Because to know our code, first they would have to find it. And how can they find it without knowing the code? Okay, forgetting about timing analysis, which is not practical in my eyes, if we could come up with a generic program which would detect SVM virtual mode, then it would mean that SVM Pacifica does not implement full virtualization. Because full virtualization, by definition, is something which makes that all programs run exactly the same on native and on and inside virtual machine. To be fair, AMD does not claim full virtualization. It just says it's secure VM. But it's commonly believed that hardware virtualization will provide full virtualization. Well, it's another question whether we really need full virtualization. The answer for yes is that we needed to, for example, analyze malware. We get some malware sample, we want to analyze it inside VM. If we don't have full virtualization, malware can do trick like red pill or whatever, right? And behave differently inside VM and outside VM. So sometimes it's actually convenient to have full virtualization. On the other hand, for a normal user, it's probably nothing useful, because we don't accept that legal applications would do the tricks to find out whether there are inside or outside VM. Although I heard about some protector which doesn't allow to execute program inside VM, but this is another story. At Kassink Advanced Malware Lab, So this is the team I work on. We researched some theoretical generic attacks against group level 1. We believe that we have two attacks, two generic attacks. But we believe that they cannot be used to do anything else than just to crash the system when it is blue-pilled. So we need to display a message to the user. Dear user, I'm going to run a test. If your machine if your machine blue screens, it means that it was blue-pilled, right? If not, it was not. Might be acceptable sometimes, but probably not in many places. Because we don't want to run a test on our 1,000 machines in our company and have them blue screened suddenly, right? Pacifica or SVM, Pacifica is the former name of SVM, is a technology from AMD. Intel came out with their own technology, which is called Vanderpool or VTX. They are not binary compatible, however they seem very similar. There's almost one-to-one mapping between instructions, so... So that Xen implements even the common abstraction level for those two technologies. I wrote, it seems possible to port the blue pill to Intel VTX, but in fact I saw a presentation at Black Hat Vegas by Dino Daizavi, another researcher, who actually implemented something similar to blue pill, and he implemented it on macOS running on Intel Duo. So just to make it clear, blue pill has nothing to do with Vista weaknesses. I just implemented blue pill on Vista just because we were doing lots of research on Vista, and well, it was just a platform we were most comfortable with. But blue pill could be implemented on another operating system like Linux or macOS or whatever. How much time do you still have? 10 minutes? 2 minutes?
20 minutes.
Okay. Blue pill prevention. Okay. So detection is one thing and prevention is different thing. Just to make it clear, because most people confuse those two things. So how to stop blue pill from installing? First, lots of people say, why don't we just disable SVM or Pacific or VTX in BIOS? In the machine which I have, I cannot do this. I don't have an option in BIOS to disable SVM, but it probably could be implemented. I heard that hardware vendors are working on some updates to do this. But it's somewhat illogical, because people spent years developing those new processors, supporting those hardware virtualization. We buy those new shiny processors just to disable this new technology, right? Apart from creating blue pill, virtualization technology has lots of legal applications, right? Everybody uses VMware, and virtualization is a good thing, right? It has lots of applications. So disabling it just because we can abuse it is maybe an overreacting. Another solution would be hypervisor built into OS. So for example, we take Vista, right? So the new operating system. Vista does not make use of the virtualization technology. Meaning there is no hypervisor in Vista. if it was, this hypervisor would be able to block installation of another hypervisor, right? That but what would be the criterion to allow third party application to install VMM? So what would be the criterion which would allow the VMware to install their VMware workstation and to desire and not to enable attacker to do the blue pill trick? Probably some kind of signing, but this is not trivial how to implement it. Okay, this is not a good way. We should have removed it. One temporary solution. Okay, and one more thing. It seems that those hypervisors which are built into the US, like in Windows, are not, it's not a new feature. It's believed that Microsoft is going to do this, but within the next 2-3 years. But for the next 2-3 years, it's unlikely that we will have that we'll have operating systems coming with their own hypervisors. So maybe just for this time, we could just have this temporary solution, which would be introducing new instruction to our processor instruction set. Let's say SVM check. And this instruction would take a password as an argument and return 0 or 1 depending whether it was executed inside the virtual machine or outside. Password should be different for every processor, because if it wasn't, then malware could just use it, like a red pill, and just behave differently inside VM and outside VM, and this is not what we want, right? Because we want full virtualization. Because we want to analyze malware, for example. That's just one idea. Okay, so I just demonstrated that arbitrary code can be injected into Vista 64-bit edition kernel up to RC1, so up to the latest edition. Of course, provided that attacker gains administrative rights. We also learned that this is a design bug and not an implementation bug. This could be abused to load unsigned kernel into unsigned code into kernel, and for example to create blue pill based malware on processors which support virtualization, hardware virtualization. Blue pill installs itself on the fly and doesn't introduce any modifications to BIOS nor hard disk. Blue can be used in many different ways to create actual malware. Delusion backdoor was just one example. We can imagine many others. Blue should be undetectable in a practical way when fully implemented, including timing analysis, using trusted time source. But I cannot talk about this at the moment because we are just researching this. Blocking blue pill-based attacks would, on a software level, might prevent independent software vendors from providing their own VMMs or security products to use VM technology. Like we might imagine like AV company to implement their rootkit detector using hypervisor, whatever. And changes in hardware, like I showed the SVM check instruction, could allow for easy blue pill detection. Ferences, Dino Daizavi, he presented very similar talk at Black Hat Vegas, concurrently to my talk. Credit to some people. Okay, and we have like 15 more minutes for questions, so. please don't be shy. Now, you asked two questions already. Let's... Okay, what is the question?
How does the view of the memory change when the fundamental virtual machine?
The question was how does the... It doesn't change at all, because this was Bloopy Level 1. Bloopy Level 1 doesn't take care of hiding any memory, of doing... and it doesn't take care of cheating memory. As I said, we don't care about it. We assume that this is targeted attack. We assume that the attacker doesn't know the signature.
No, I'm referring to the memory size, the physical memory size,
It doesn't change at all. It doesn't change. The question was, how does the memory size change after I allowed Blue Pill? It doesn't change at all. Because Blue Pill level 1 doesn't cheat about memory. Blue Pill level 2 also should be able to preserve the original memory size. But this is more tricky. In Blue Pill level 1, we just don't care about it. Because we don't hide memory. There is no need to hide memory because we don't introduce any kernel modifications. We don't care. Our hypervisor code looks like JPEG picture. It's located somewhere. And there is no modification inside kernel. We don't have to worry about hiding anything. We don't change any memory. Okay, next question.
We're also going to have a speakers table outside after the conference, just to let everyone know.
Okay. So if you're more comfortable asking questions later, then... Okay, thank you very much. I finished so early. Because I don't know how this happened. How much time did I have? I had like 90 minutes, right? I was thinking that because I started talking so slowly at the beginning, I probably started talking. Yeah, okay. I'm going to
Thank you.